The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 12th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. Happy birthday to my wife of nearly 20 years. I love you. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, what's this? A 10-year farm bill and an end to direct payments. We'll have details of that story shortly. Also, this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and all about why spraying corn for gray leaf spot is okay, but spraying corn for a yield boost really is not. And don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat contract for Kansas or for the soft red down 41 cents at $10.07 today. July futures at 9:30 down 49 on the afternoon. March corn futures at 4.97¾, 5¾ lower. The May contract at $5.11 down 5¾. And July futures at 5.21¾, 5¾ lower. December corn futures and nickel lower at 5.20¼. March soybean futures 13.21 down 5 cents. The May at 13.38½ down 7. And July futures at 13.49¼ down 5¼ on the afternoon. November soybeans at $12.71 down 11 cents. March bean meal futures at 3.52.30 down 3.20. March bean oil at 55.66 down 36. Feeder cattle, live cattle traded like this at the CME Group. Nearby Feb's at 91.92½ down 25. April's at 32½ lower at 94.77½. March feeders at 105.75 down 15. And the lean hogs February contract at 58.57½. Down, or rather up, 72½ cents on the afternoon. Outside markets look like this for the day. March crude oil at 92.75, down 84. April futures at 92.82, down 79 on the hour. The CRB index at 375.62, down 37. And the U.S. dollar at 76.331 is down just about 25 points for the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 12,429 is 190 points higher for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region. There is a winter weather advisory in effect for portions of southern and east central Indiana, that until 6 o'clock this evening. Winter storm warnings are in effect for a portion of southwestern Indiana until 3 o'clock this afternoon, and in far southeastern Indiana until midnight tonight. Tonight, across the two-state region, our own Mike Sola says, in southern Indiana, cloudy, some freezing rain this evening. That'll change to snow. In northeastern Illinois and northwestern Indiana, mostly cloudy. Some scattered snow showers and occasional snow squalls. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 3 in far northwestern Illinois to near 30 in southern Illinois. Wednesday in northeastern Illinois and northwestern Indiana, intervals of clouds, some sunshine, occasional lake effect snow showers. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy early, becoming partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range from around 20 in northwestern Illinois to 34 in southwestern Illinois. The extended forecast, cooler than average temperatures and higher than average precipitation expected across the upper Midwest through the weekend. Low-lying locations will continue to experience flooding, with areas near the Ohio River, which will see some worsening flood conditions. The next chance of precip will begin late Thursday, with snow possible mainly in the northern parts of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on a Tuesday afternoon is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
And tell me about the marketplace. Let's start with the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, where we had one contract up 60 cents and one down 60 cents.
Well, you know, the real squeeze, of course, is in the March Minneapolis wheat. That's not a secret. The world's known that for, what, 2-3 weeks now for sure. You know, we had indications of it before, but it's really been the talk of the town. It does look like, and there are comments that it should trade tonight, there was offers, and it looked like up 20 cents or so that we will see some trade in the March Minneapolis wheat tonight in the evening trade. So I think with that happening, the spread's going on, and seeing that the tight squeeze is just about over here, while we saw some real setbacks in the Kansas City and Chicago wheat also and along the way, and which, of course, bled over into the corn and the beans. But they come back favorably on the close compared to how they'd been just 20 minutes beforehand.
You know, how's this liquidation process seen by brokers, floor traders, those in the business? Do you think that it will be over fairly quickly and things will get orderly in all of the marketplaces?
I think we're still going to remain very, very high volatility in all of these markets for a couple reasons. Number one, because of the desperate need of more crops, because of the world needs, because of possible weather problems throughout the world, and also because of short supplies and the big battles for acres. And, of course, the levels we're at. I mean, you know, a percentage move from these levels is a much bigger number than it was, you know, when we're talking about $5 corn compared to $2 corn. And so, you know, we are going to see wider swings. The volatility is going to stay high, but it is definitely getting more orderly as soon as we get all the months trading.
March corn settled at $4.97¾. The March beans at $13.21. Still on track for something over $5 and I suppose over $12 or near, I don't know, $12.50 or something along those lines for the soybeans for the month of February as we set insurance prices?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at some tremendously high prices for guarantees on the RA, CRC, and, of course, the GRIP policies that will be set during this month. You know, we look for the market to probably become a trading range here, and as we get the wheat trading, we thought it'd be a little bit more biased to the downside, still a lot of underlying strength out there, Todd, the way that we bounced back on the close, especially you know, with looking at May wheat down 60 cents today, and yet we were able to bounce off our lows quite substantially in both the corn and the beans coming into the close.
And fundamentally, what do you see for the soybeans? Is it the rainfall in South America that might lend strength to it over the coming few days?
Well, I think, you know, we're seeing some yield estimates come out from down there, some of them a little better, some a little worse than what they're doing, and talking about the amount of rain we had down there, how much it'll cut it back and what it'll do like that. But I think over the next week to 2-3 weeks, we're going to see a lot of the world demand switch to South America for the new crop beans coming out down there and see some of our business move away, which it does this time every year. But all in all, the bean stocks are very tight with the WASD report, of course, basically in supply and demand, you know, trimmed the carryout again last week. And we're going to continue to see some fighting for acres and what's going on here.
Anything else that you want to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
That's about it for today, Todd.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Tuesday afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the futures markets from Chicago, Minneapolis, and Kansas City. A quick reminder, there is a winter weather advisory in effect for portions of southern and east central Indiana. That until 6 o'clock this evening. Winter storm warnings are in effect for a portion of southwestern Indiana until 3 o'clock this afternoon. And in the far southeastern parts of Indiana until midnight tonight. In today's agricultural news, a tentative House White House Farm Bill deal threatens to whack spending, disaster aid, and tighten payment limits
and may be unpalatable to key senators and farm groups. The deal, which may be announced shortly, along with House conferees, reportedly contains provisions that would be hard for the Senate and farm groups to live with. American Farm Bureau Federation farm policy specialist Tara Smith says some reports indicate a 10-year farm bill with a cut in direct payments, a $500,000 adjusted gross income soft cap for full-time farmers to receive payments, and a loss of so-called beneficial interest. But that's not all.
I don't know any details of what happens to specialty crops, but it's been reported that there's a $3 billion reduction in the $11.4 billion increase to food stamp dollars.
The House White House plan would eliminate direct payments in year 9 of the bill, saving about $5.2 billion, and end the Senate's permanent disaster aid, about $5 billion. Politically sensitive, of course, for key senators. Smith says a coalition of farm groups has written lawmakers opposing the possible framework.
Things like cuts to direct payments that have already been considered by the House and the Senate and rejected by the House and the Senate shouldn't now be on the table during the conference.
House Chair Colin Peterson and ranking Republican Bob Goodlatte issued an open letter calling for a more realistic funding approach to avoid a long-threatened presidential veto over the tax hikes. The two conceded that this would disappoint some who wanted more out of the farm bill, but the House GOP was not yet on board, and Senate and Conference Chair Tom Harkin issued a statement that the Senate looks forward to learning further details so the two bodies can work out a bill the president can sign. The National Corn Growers Association Senior Director of Public Policy Sam Willett says what he's heard so far could raise big hurdles with the Senate.
Without a disaster assistance package, I think that creates a real hurdle for the House and Senate to come together. And then there are some significant differences on payment limits. And a lot of groups prefer the payment limits that passed out of the Senate.
Plus, with the original funding levels for nutrition, conservation, and specialty crops in jeopardy, Willett says it becomes more than problematic to reach a House-Senate deal. The Farm Bureau's Tara Smith says there have already been Senate objections.
Certainly Baucus, Conrad, Mr. Chambliss have already objected, and my understanding is that folks over in the Senate, including Senator Baucus, are working on an alternative.
Though it's uncertain if they will be ready to counter any House-White House plan this week if member negotiations begin before President's Day recess that starts Friday. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Public radio for the farming world. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says ethanol is still all about keeping profits in America.
There is an email going around, maybe you've seen it, with pictures of a huge gilded palatial complex in the United Arab Emirates. The email claims it is the home of a sheik paid for by oil money. According to www.snoops.com, the urban myth debunking website, the place is actually a luxury hotel in Dubai. Although the email gets it wrong and the pictures show a hotel, you can still bet that a lot of oil revenues have gone into it. The email concludes with a question, amazing what $2.75 a gallon gas can buy, isn't it? There is a lot of excitement in the United States about alternatives to oil. Biodiesel made from soybeans and ethanol made from corn, grasses, wood chips, and stalks. Right now, most ethanol is made from corn. As production of corn-based ethanol has increased, so has criticism, such as the claim that we could run out of food or not be able to afford it because U.S. ethanol refineries are using so much corn. A New York Times editorial on September 19, 2007, said, the ramp-up in ethanol production was causing food prices to rise and threatening misery for the poorest countries. Yes, the poorest countries. We've been hearing a lot about them from the New York Times. In fact, it was only a year or two ago that the newspaper and others' opinion that U.S. overproduction of commodities due to farm subsidies was making it impossible for farmers in poor countries to compete with U.S. exports. U.S. farmers are either overproducing or underproducing, but it can't be both. The good news for farmers everywhere, in poor and rich countries, is that demand for their crops is way up. Of course, ethanol production is one factor that has contributed to an increase in the price of corn. The American Farm Bureau Federation says the U.S. corn price will likely break the 1996 record of $5.54 per bushel by this spring. But ethanol isn't the only factor in higher crops or food prices. The world supply of grains is tight. Last year's weather problems in Europe and Australia reduced the supply of wheat. A growing middle class in places like China and India are consuming more meat and milk, driving up the demand for livestock feed. The growth in ethanol production happened to coincide with these global trends, conveniently for ethanol critics. As demand for corn increases, farmers are heeding market signals and producing more. No matter how much more corn they grow, farmers can't grow enough to fuel every vehicle on the road, but that never has been the goal. Farmers can and do grow enough to displace some of our oil imports, which also will help lower fuel prices and improve the environment. It seems no matter what American farmers do, they will always be somebody's whipping boy. But claiming that they're taking food out of people's mouths is a new low. Which would you rather support, Middle East palaces or a homegrown fuel industry that creates jobs and economic renewal in the United States? Let's burn more U.S.-grown renewable fuel and send fewer American dollars to places like Dubai. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just call us at 217-333-0850. Up next, this growing season, farmers across the Midwest will be tempted to use fungicides unnecessarily. It is quite likely they'll chase the yield boosts that are sometimes associated with a well-timed application. But as I'll report, the short-term rewards could result in a long-term risk. We'll cut to the chase quickly. Fungicides are not labeled as growth regulators to increase yield, but that's what they can do. They are labeled for control of fungal diseases in crops like corn, soybeans, cotton, and wheat. So it's perfectly fine for a farmer to use the products anytime they see fit, even if the disease is not present in a field at economically damaging levels. Here's the problem with that, says University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley. Diseases like gray leaf spot in corn are at high risk to developing fungicide resistance.
It is a concern, especially when we're talking about more corn on corn, and if somebody sprays the first year and then comes back and sprays again the second year on that same piece of ground, well, there's going to be individuals, not very many, but there'll be a few individuals that we selected out as having less sensitive that first year, and those will be back the second year too. And so that's how we add up the selection pressure.
Grayleaf spot is part of a family known to easily develop resistance to the active chemicals found in fungicides. A Carl Bradley says farmers should only use those fungicides when they are called for, and even then, very carefully.
Right, I agree. And as I've said, I do agree that foliar fungicides are a very good tool. They do have their place, but their place is not on every single corn plant in the state of Illinois. And so I think using those in certain circumstances, in instances where there is disease present or there's disease is favorable, conditions are favorable for disease, then that's where we should be thinking about using those products.
The only way to really know when the conditions are right is to scout the field. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Time now for our weekly look at the energy market. Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois, joins us to take a look at them. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon.
This is the first time I've had an opportunity to talk with you, and you now have a regular slot on the radio station. Our Tuesday analyst, the second Tuesday of the month, will be your normal slot. First, can you tell me a little bit about Archer Financial Services and yourself?
Archer Financial Services is an introducing broker of ADM Investor Services. I'm a futures strategist that has been in the industry for close to 30 years, so I hope I'm not aging myself too much, but given that kind of background, I've seen a lot of markets, and certainly some of these markets bring back some of the memories of the 1970s.
A futures strategist means what?
Certainly developing hedging and risk models and metrics for producers and users of not only the energy products but other commodities as well.
Tell me a little bit about the energy products as you see them today and the strategies that might be employed, I suppose, by the ethanol industry.
Certainly, the energy markets here pulled back from some rather sharp gyrations that move prices sharply higher here over the past week. Incidentally, the market pretty much made its low into the DOE numbers last week, which did show a rather large build in terms of crude inventories and gasoline inventories. We did respond, though, on the upside to comments by out of Venezuela suggesting threats of export embargo against the U.S. following some of the Exxon moves to attach some of their assets following their appropriation of their assets last year. That helped firm up the crude market and really set the tone for a focus on the supply side versus what had been really concerns over the demand side for this market.
Does this change the way you view the marketplace other than its supply side as opposed to demand side and where it might be headed?
Well, at least for now, I still have to think the demand side is going to call the shots, particularly from these levels. We are seeing a rather ample supply situation as evidenced by the European stock situation and also our inventory situation that has been apparent here over the past few weeks. I do think the demand side has been hurt by the economic prospects that seem to be in force at the current time. I'm not a full believer that we're necessarily moving into a recession, but certainly that's a possibility and is weighing on the market and keeping, I think, users from extending coverage to any large degree until they really sort through some of the issues.
So you're suggesting a contraction in demand, supply is ample, that should push prices lower, I would think.
At least in the near term. And some of that has been, to a large extent, discounted. You can't ignore what's going on overseas. We have certainly seen, some of the emerging market economies still show a rather buoyant tone, although very volatile tone. There is some contraction in their growth rates, at least in the near term, and probably over the next few months that will be apparent. But, you know, at this juncture, the supply-demand seems to be rather balanced. And many people were looking for this quarter to see a pretty sharp decline in inventories, which really has not developed. And I think that's attributable to a couple factors. One, certainly the demand side seems to be a little bit off, at least in the U.S. And two, the supply side. OPEC has certainly come in with the supplies to this market, with some of the recent estimates suggesting that we could see another 600,000 barrel increase out of OPEC here over the next quarter, even though they have basically said they are not going to be producing any large increases from what they had indicated last September at their meeting this past in early February. I think what we're seeing is some of these other areas that don't have the quotas, such as Iraq and Angola, seeing some pretty good gains in their production levels, along with some of the non-OPEC sources, such as Brazil and Russia, also seeing increases. That is keeping this market pretty amply supplied. Now, as we move through this year, the situation looks like it will get progressively tighter. And the IEA, which will be coming out with some estimates tomorrow, will shed some light on both the demand side, which they've tended to keep rather stable from their estimates in the fall, and also how the production side is coming along and showing some of the increases I just mentioned.
Steve, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks much.
And you have a good day.
You too. Thanks
you.
Much.
Bye.
That is Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. He's now our regular second Tuesday analyst for our weekly look at the energy markets. In 2 minutes, we'll come back and take a look at the agricultural weather segment.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Thousands of Ameren customers are in the dark after a winter storm left parts of southern Illinois coated with ice and snow. The storm was also blamed for a roof collapse at a bread-making business in Herrin. There are no reports of injuries. Southern Illinois University at Carbondale canceled classes today. Icy road conditions are blamed for a crash in rural Champaign County that killed a man from Broadlands. The county sheriff says 70-year-old Frederick Domi lost control of his truck just outside the town. The vehicle left the road and rolled over several times before it came to rest in the field. Domi was pronounced dead at Carl Foundation Hospital. Two children in the truck weren't hurt. The Clinton Nuclear Power Plant is back online. Exelon Nuclear says the power station returned to service today after workers replaced an electronic card in a circuit protection system. That's part of the control system for the reactor's recirculation pumps. Exelon officials shut down the plant Sunday after a reactor pump went offline. Exelon says the plant responded to the incident and there was no danger to the public. An attorney plans to appeal after a court threw out her suit against the city of Champaign last week. Ruth Wyman sued the mayor and the city, saying the city council retires to executive sessions with a voice vote instead of a roll call vote and doesn't name others who were invited to speak in those closed sessions. The city's attorney, Fred Stavens, claims that the Open Meetings Act doesn't require what Wyman is asking for. A weekend bike ride and a film festival patterned on Ebertfest are among the first ideas put forward as Champaign County marks next year's bicentennial of Abraham Lincoln's birth. A commission of area government leaders, educators, and history buffs used today's 199th anniversary to outline more than a year's worth of activities for later this year and for 2009. Those activities also include wayside markers at sites where Lincoln was known to have stayed and a permanent display in the Champaign County Courthouse, which sits on the site of the original frame house where Lincoln served as a traveling attorney. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, it was a little slippery on the way in from where I live to the station on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois this morning. It looks like we're in for a bit of snow, but not too terribly bad conditions for the middle of winter, I suppose.
Yeah, for February, not all that bad. Certainly not unusual. A little bit of snow coming, but pretty darn cold. Temperatures across the Midwest, Corn Belt area is only going to struggle into the 20s the next couple of days. Moderating temperatures briefly Thursday, then kind of back down again as we get on into Friday and the weekend. Pattern's going to stay active. We're going to see probably a pretty significant system coming out of the Plain States, especially the Southern Plains here at the end of the week and the weekend.
And then maybe could you check in on some of the northern growing areas for me up in Minnesota? Talk about what type of conditions they might have. There should probably be some folks that are thinking about putting spring wheat in the next month or so.
Well, right now, the odds of them getting some moisture looks very good to help out with spring planting. Most of North Dakota, eastern South Dakota, and all of Minnesota, Wisconsin, northern Iowa, are going to be in the path of several systems coming on through. So they're going to be cold, very stormy, but it's going to bring some good moisture, some of the best moisture they've seen this season.
And speaking of moisture, it's been awfully wet in South America.
Yes, it has, and Brazil will continue to be wet, although Argentina drying out a little bit.
And how about if you check in with the Chinese crops as they'll be put in the ground, I think just a bit after we actually start the planting season here in the United States, but how are they faring for winter precipitation?
Well, winter precipitation has been excessive in some areas. There's going to be some good soil moisture in China, making some headlines this winter have been some big, big storms, big snowstorms, some of the biggest in decades. And right now the trend is for more stormy weather and colder than normal weather across all of China and most of Eastern Asia. So they're going to maybe, depending on how the late winter and early spring goes, they may have to wait for some of that snow to melt before things get in the ground.
And that's corn and soybeans, but we ought to check back in on some of the wheat-growing regions. Maybe India, to see how they're coming along. I think they have a spring green wheat crop and a winter amber crop that they put into the ground.
Well, right, it's been a little bit on the dry side. Now, there is some rain chances in across central and southern India here over the next couple of next week or two. They need some more. They're a little bit on the dry side over there in South Asia, and it does look like they'll get a little bit of help. But right now, moisture conditions, soil moisture-wise, with the exception of extreme southern India, drier than normal.
Any place on the planet of note that we missed that we should talk about? Or
well, one important weather feature that's going to be developing will be some significant rains in some of the southern plains in southeast United States. There could be some needed moisture coming to portions of Texas and Oklahoma, and some of the areas that are still in drought conditions in Georgia, southeast United States, could see some big rains before the next 5 days is over.
Don, thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. They're available for download at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.